The new head of Jacksonville's largest university says he's focused on improving the student experience. Good Thursday morning and live. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, a conversation with new UNF president David Szymanski. What are your questions for him as he succeeds John Delaney at the school? Give us a call right now, 549-2937. Then later, how you can weigh in on the future of this area's transportation grid. Plus, don't miss our big ticket giveaway to the Southern Women's Show. That and more coming up this hour. But first this morning, UNF's new president, David Szymanski, has been on the job for a few months now. Szymanski is the former dean of the Carl Lindner College of Business at the University of Cincinnati. And he's succeeding former president John Delaney. Big shoes to fill, but Szymanski has ambitious goals of his own for the university. We're pleased to welcome new UNF President David Szymanski to Studio 5 to discuss the future of the University of North Florida. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you, and welcome to Jacksonville.
Thank you. It's fantastic to be here.
And lots to talk about. Already getting calls for you. What are your comments, thoughts, questions for UNF's new college president, David Szymanski? It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And comments on Facebook, always welcome as well. Okay, so you come to us from Cincinnati. I used to live there myself. Big change. And I'm at this time of year, I'm sure it's a welcome one.
Yeah, no, it's phenomenal to be here. It's a wonderful city and it's a wonderful university. And my wife and I feel like it's home on day one. It's a great place to be.
Now, you come from leading a business college, right? The Lindner College of Business at U Cincinnati. That's a different kettle of fish than leading this university. So the skill set you brought is one that I think the people that made the decision were really excited about. Years in academia, you also at UC created something called the PACE program. That is a program for students emphasizing professionalism, academics, engagement. You're really focused on the student experience is what it seems as you begin this new position. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about student success. And so how are we going to make our students successful? Most of our students come from this region, and 75% of them come from the city of Jacksonville, and 96% are from the state of Florida. We want to make Jacksonville successful. We want to make the state successful. And it's all about how can we make the student do a better job, better educate them, also think about jobs.
What are the biggest challenges to achieving that right now?
You know, I think the biggest challenge is really just thinking about the changing the culture in some respects, and so making sure that everybody is on the same page. I think we have a great university. John did a wonderful job creating a phenomenal foundation for us. And it's just getting everybody focused on how we're going to create success in the classroom and how what kind of majors do we need, what kind of minors do we need. It's really just about focusing on the students.
Are you thinking about creating new programs at UNF?
Yeah, absolutely. We're not standing still. So it's thinking about what, you know, looking at the state, looking at the region, what are some of the jobs and some of the job opportunities? If you look at Jacksonville, a lot in healthcare. So we start thinking about STEM initiatives and STEM programs. We also think about education, K through 12, big needs within the area besides the businesses. And also really with respect to some of our other liberal arts majors too as well.
Funding for the state university system is always an issue.
Yeah.
That's something I know your predecessor grappled with. What about you? Tell us what's going on with that.
Yeah, so we're going to embrace the metrics. So we have a system of metrics. And if you look at the state of Florida, it's actually a very interesting, lucrative state. And so they spend a lot of money on education. And they also give you an opportunity, if you're doing your job really, really well, to get further funding. And so we're going to focus in on graduation rates, retention, attracting Pell Grant students, thinking about placing people in jobs, and thinking about the cost of education.
It's 549-2937. In a moment, we'll go to your calls for the new president of UNF, David Szymanski. Now, for people that can't see you, as I can, let me explain that you are 6'6".
Yes, ma'am.
You played basketball, no surprise.
Yeah.
In fact, I think you got a basketball scholarship. You were the first in your family to go to college. Is that right?
Right. So I'm a first-generation student, and so that was my pathway to get to college. And so it was great to at least be tall and have minimum athletic ability enough to get me to college. So,
where did you grow up?
I grew up in Buffalo, New York.
And And so where'd you go to college?
So I went to undergraduate at UNC Asheville, and then I went to Vanderbilt and University of Wisconsin.
And played basketball all the way through.
Yeah, and I also played tennis. So I was on a tennis scholarship too. So 4 years of basketball, 4 years of tennis.
So you have an appreciation then for the student population, and especially the ones that are struggling to afford to go and really want to go, but it's not accessible to many.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we're doing, and we're going to be doing this this spring, is putting more dollars into scholarships. And so we just got approval from our board of trustees to add $2.5 million worth of scholarships that we're going to disperse to students in the spring to make college affordable and accessible for them. So I fully understand they appreciate the value of scholarships.
Yeah, I mean, our local state college, FSCJ, is working to make college virtually free for students. On the one hand, the universities here collaborate, but on the other hand, they are competing for students. So how do you navigate that?
So we also have joint programs with FSCJ, and so we're trying to think about pathways for the students. So some students, it's important for them to enter into a different system for the first year or two, and then they have the opportunity to come to UNF. And so it's important for us to begin thinking about how we can partner, how can we create joint programs, how can we think about degrees. We're doing this with respect to engineering right now in terms of a new program with respect to resiliency.
And what are your thoughts about the politics of this? On the progressive side of the political spectrum, it's increasingly become a value that college should be free or virtually free because you need a college degree in today's world the way you used to need a high school degree.
Right.
What do you think about that?
So we're working to reduce the cost of education. A real plus about Florida is we're 49th in the country in terms of affordability. It's about a little over $6,000 a year to go to college, which is pretty near free, but I know it's a strain. So again, the emphasis on scholarships is important for us to further reduce the cost of education. And we're also looking at a lot of textbooks and what can we do to reduce some of the other costs associated with going to school. So it's not just the tuition, but textbooks are really expensive. And so we're working on strategies and approaches, working hard with our libraries to figure out ways to also reduce that cost of education too.
All right, let's go to some calls now for David Szymanski. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking now with UNF's new president. Szymanski this year succeeded John Delaney, who was the fifth president of the school. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Maria is up on Amelia Island. Hi, Maria. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just had a couple of questions. I'm a student at UNF in the nursing program. And first of all, I would like to say it's a beautiful campus. You have wonderful faculty. And the students there are very well supported by the faculty and encouraged, and we have every opportunity we need to succeed. So thank you for that. The problem I wanted to speak with you about is I wondered how much attention are you going to give to your federal student aid program at the college? Because coming from the student's point of view, it's a very difficult department to maneuver. They tend to give us last-minute flags on our accounts to the point where several students, including myself, have had to take out private loans in order to cover the classes at the last minute because the departments don't communicate with you until the last minute. So I think it's difficult because these are entitlement programs, especially mine is a Pell Grant. Mm-hmm. And just what we have to go through at UNF in order to receive our funds is unusually difficult. And I think it targets the low-income students because of the fact that, you know, most students that I know are unable to come up with the amount of money to cover the classes and not get them dropped in the amount of time that we're given. So I was just wondering what you were going to do or if there's anything you can do to help the students in that area.
Sure. Well, thanks for your comment, Maria, and I appreciate the positive comments, too, about our institution. And you know, what I'm doing now and I have been doing for the last 2 months as school started is spending more and more time talking to students, not only finding out what they like and why they chose UNF and for the many of the same reasons that you also articulated, but also finding out where do we need to improve. And so one of the priorities, and it is an explicit priority, is to improve our services. And so how can we better serve our students and not just do a pretty good job at it, but be excellent with respect to that? So your comment is one that's resonating well, and one that I'm going to work towards making sure it doesn't happen, so that people do have an easy transition, able to get their financial aid, able to register and attend their classes. So I appreciate your comment, and we'll be working on that, I promise you.
It's 549-2937. Aaron is in Springfield. Hey, Aaron. Good morning.
Hello. How are you?
Good morning. Good.
You had mentioned the metrics before. Some have said that the metrics favor certain types of institutions over others, and I was wondering if that was going to sway your direction for the university going on in the future.
Hmm. So, and let's explain what that is all about.
Sure.
The state metrics around the state universities.
Yeah. So there's 10 goals that the state gives, and depending on how you do, they give you points, and there's a scoring system. And if you score, significant number of points, then you get extra dollars coming in. And so at a minimum, if you're in the money, it's around $10 million, and it can go up from there. You know, I think what we're looking at is that the metrics are for us and not against us. In some ways, when we're looking at the size of our institution, we're more flexible, we're more nimble, we can pivot. The important parts that we want to work on, which are part of the metrics that we always should be working on as an academic institution, no matter where we're at, is really about attracting Pell Grant students is one of the metrics, for example. Student retention, when students come, making sure they stay and are able to stay. Graduation rates are another important metric for that. How can we increase that? And so we're explicitly focused on increasing graduation rates. And it's about placement, making sure students not only have jobs, but also that they have well-paying jobs. And that's something that we're going to continue to work on and also work on in partnership with Jacksonville. So it may be that some institutions are more capable of doing certain things immediately, but it's one of those that we're going to embrace and look at the challenge and say, if we do our job really well, which is about attracting, retaining, graduating and placing students, that the state comes in and helps us. So I appreciate your comment, Aaron, and we're going to be working towards that because I think it's to the benefit of the institution.
UNF and other local schools have beefed up their downtown presence. Can you bring us up to date on how that is moving forward for more UNF students to be studying and living downtown?
Right. So one of the initiatives we have downtown, as many of you know, is MoCA, which is the art museum. And so what we also want to do is continue not only to build that out in terms of what it does for the city, but also what it can do for our students. Having more students downtown, having the opportunity to learn, having the opportunity to interact. The other thing that we're doing is also building out an innovation and entrepreneurship center downtown. It's currently being remodeled. I think we're hoping to be on board perhaps in the next semester, if not in the fall semester for sure. And it's about educating people in downtown. It's also about creating a space where people can think about developing new products, new services, new technologies, and they can work with not only students working with people from the business community, but the business community working with students. So mm-hmm. we're trying to do our best to also help and be a vital part of the downtown area and its renovation.
Terry in St. Augustine. Hi, Terry. You're on the air. Good morning.
How are you?
Okay, go ahead.
This is the problem. I am a widow, and I sold my home to have my daughter go to college. I supported my daughter and my granddaughter, and I was in my 60s at the time. I went back to work for extra income because I wanted my daughter to be a teacher. She went through UNF. She passed all of her exams. They did not prepare her properly for her teacher's exam through the state. It's been 4 years, and she still has not been able to pass all of the tests that they give.
Why do you say that is, Terry? Why do you say She's not ready?
First of all, I don't think UNF prepared her properly for the test ahead of time. And I think that the state is making that test way, way too difficult. My daughter is supposed to be an elementary school teacher. She is taking a test in math that is so advanced and so confusing, she said. They give you 4 different questions, and they're very confusing questions.
Okay.
And it's very advanced.
All righty. I appreciate the call, Terry. Thanks for the call. Okay. So not everyone is happy with the programs and the curriculum at UNF. I'm sure you've heard a lot of feedback, both good and bad, as you've begun the job. What about that?
Sure. So we're looking back to the notion of student success. So what can we do? How can we help and make sure that your granddaughter and everybody passes the test? And I know that's a priority for us. We want to make sure that our students are coming out highly qualified. And maybe I'm not familiar enough with the test and whether it's been changed in recent years, but I know it's certainly a priority for us. We want to make sure students come out and as best prepared and able to practice their craft as they can. So I'll also talk and make sure that we talk to the deans and sort of look into this. I know the passing rate tends to be very high, but there's always some difficulties associated with.
What is the passing rate?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I apologize for that, but I don't.
Okay. Dan in Jacksonville. Hi, Dan. Good morning. Hey, Dan, go ahead. Okay, he must have put us on hold, but the question he wanted to ask is, what is the atmosphere on campus like in terms of race relations?
Yeah, so I think it's one that's continually being improved. We have a group of people that's called CODI, which is about our, it's all about our different communities and different ethnic groups and different orientations. And so it's one of working hard to talk to students and to talk to the community. And it's part of, we're creating, a culture, and people will hear from me a lot about integrity and respect. And it's about respecting people for who they are and what they're all about. And we're going to lead with that. And so that'll be a new, renewed, and changed perspective on campus to make sure that everybody is respected for who they are and what they're all about.
College campuses have become such a flashpoint in the culture wars, and I'm sure you're going to go right into that buzzsaw as well, as John Delaney did, and any college president. We had the white nationalist Richard Spencer last year speak at UF over in Gainesville. That was very controversial. In the end, he was allowed to speak. And at the same time, there has been a movement on many campuses to shut down speech that some students feel is offensive or hate speech. And then you see pushback from conservatives who say college campuses should be a place of free expression. All forms of speech should be allowed, including and especially those that you disagree with. That's the whole point of going to college, to look at different points of view. And so it's been fascinating to watch this free speech debate play out on college campuses. How do you plan to address that?
Yeah, so thanks, Melissa. It's a tough issue and it's a tough question. And I think it's perhaps most difficult to answer in a very general kind of way, but I think it's case specific. And when we think about it, we think about who the individual might be that's coming on campus. What is the topic? Is it an issue that would help people expand their knowledge base and also bring new perspectives? It's almost like any speaker that you bring onto campus and you say, okay, what contribution do they make? And then the other issue that you think about is also around campus safety and making sure that our students are safe when speakers come. So I think you have to really look at these as a case-by-case basis as you go through it, because we want to make sure that people are making a contribution, but also that our students are safe.
Lots of tweets for you, new UNF President David Szymanski. Meanwhile, here's one from Rex. I'd like to know what his plans are to ensure that UNF is in tune with the local business community so that students can better integrate into the local economy. You're a former business dean, so that's a good one for you to talk about.
Sure, this is one of the great things. And, people ask me one reason and some of the reasons why I came to Jacksonville, and one is the community and the business community. And I think the future of education is really that integration. It's that what I call the seamless classroom. And so you can't tell where the university starts and the community ends, and also where the community ends and where the university starts. It's about integrating. It's about immersion. It's about partnering with the business community to think about how can we enrich the learning experience. So it's really one of the positives. And I think it really truly is the future of education and why Jacksonville and UNF are so well positioned.
Here's another one for you from Jay. I'm an alum and I want to know how UNF will increase its profile through research and experiential learning, community engagement by students and faculty. #swoop.
Yeah, good. Thank you. So it's about internships we're talking about. And we're going to talk a lot about internships. It's about getting that experience when you're a sophomore and a junior and then into your senior year so that all of a sudden you have an enriched learning experience in the classroom, but you're also well poised to get a job when you get out. So we're going to work on that. But it goes beyond that because it goes into really class projects that you can do and real world projects. And how can you partner? And it's also about getting the community into the classroom, having people come and speak and interact and mentor our students. So it's really, again, back to this notion of what's the future education look like. It's going to look like what we're going to be doing at UNF with Jacksonville.
But positioning UNF as more of a research university, I know that's long been a goal, hasn't it?
Yeah, and so we have one of the strong selling points, is, and particularly as I talk to students with the reasons that they come and they stay, is their opportunity to work with faculty as undergraduates and as freshmen and sophomores. You know, and so that opportunity to learn by partnership with faculty members who have terminal degrees and work on real projects is pretty exciting for them. And so it will continue to be one of our distinguishing and one of the things that makes us uniquely UNF.
Julie at the Beaches. Hi, Julie. How are you? Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I just was wondering, I know you're going to be working with the business community. First of all, welcome to Jacksonville. And then what about the industries that are not here? You know, the more, I'm not sure what the right word is, but the renewable energy. So wind power, solar power, wave power. Will you be doing anything to develop those to lure those kinds of businesses here to make us more cutting edge, perhaps?
Yeah, thanks, Julie. Yeah, absolutely. So part of what our role is to also help in terms of economic development and economic attraction. So how can we get companies to come to the Jacksonville area to not only relocate, but also then to do work with us as our students, the institution, but also partners within the community? And so I look at one of our goals is how can we be an epicenter? How can we be an epicenter for cutting edge research, knowledge, partnerships that also makes Jacksonville a more attractive city when people are thinking about where should I locate my headquarters? Where should I go for jobs? Where should I look for students who would be valuable employees for us? So it's one of our priorities moving forward. So thanks, Julie.
And one more call. It's Bill on the South Side. Let's get him in the queue.
Academic.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Bill, you're on the air. Hey, Bill, it's Melissa. Okay. You're on the air.
Okay. Hey there. Thank you. Good morning. I'm a UNF alum myself and had a terrific experience there having transferred from an expensive private college, had a much better experience with the professors at UNF. But when I was attending there, it was sort of a commuter school a long time ago. Now it's becoming much more of a traditional school. So I'm curious now that I've got a high school senior looking at colleges. By the way, UNF is number one in the running for him right now because of a unique major UNF has. But what's being done to continue UNF down the path to be a campus and a life experience where these students really want to be, they want to spend 4 years, specifically outside the academic arena, which you've already discussed.
Right. Thanks, Bill, and I appreciate all your support, and please send your child to us. So we do appreciate that. You know, it is a priority for us, and what their priority is how do we create that campus culture. And we're working with the Student Government Association president to think about ways to make it a campus where people not only want to go to school from, you know, 9 to 5, but also spend the rest of their evenings there. We've also created a new position where we have a senior position within my office that's really about student engagement and creating student experiences and really kind of the safe student experience part of this, where people are excited about being around other students and creating that sense of community. And so we've come a long way. We have a master plan that involves more housing. So if we can get some funding for that and work that master plan through, it'll be another opportunity for more students to be on campus. But as you correctly pointed out, the culture has changed over time before the positive. So I appreciate it, and I appreciate your support.
Naomi on the South Side. Hi, Naomi.
Oh, my gosh. Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm a UNF alumni. I graduated from the Bachelor of Social Work program, and I personally had a good experience with that. But I think I have a helpful comment about race relations and inclusion on a college campus. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be... you know, just saying the words inclusion and diversity is not going to be enough. Just because the kids are all together physically, that doesn't necessarily mean they're interacting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there were some helpful things that I experienced when I went there, such as like open conversations and discussions around race. And there were like safety nets in place in case anything should happen, but nothing nothing bad happened during those conversations. There were some, like, protests and demonstrations from the students with the Democrats. They did a great job with that. But, yeah, just more open and honest conversations about race, the root cause of race issues. And, you know, no more beating around the bush, because that's not going to help solve race relations, you know?
Yep. Thanks, Naomi. Absolutely right.
No, I appreciate your comment. And so, you know, one of the things that we're going to be doing is thinking about how we create a better sense of community. And what I did at the University of Cincinnati was create a program called Business Fellows, which was about minority students and really helping students and helping everyone understand the role that people play in the community. And really, it truly is about community. It's about that support. And back to the notion of, if you're listening a little bit earlier, we're talking about respect. And so it's respecting people for who they are and what they're all about, and making sure that we do really kind of include everybody. You know, inclusion, I think, is an overused term, as you said, but it is really, I think, about respect. And so we're going to be working to build a stronger culture, you know, with your help and the help of others. We're going to create a community, and we are creating a community, and we do have, you know, the community in place, where it really is one of everybody feeling like they're part of UNF.
Yeah, what she referenced is not unlike what the Human Rights Commission has done here for years. Circles where you get people talking to each other that don't see eye to eye. Is that something you think that the school might look at?
Sure. And we have that opportunity. We have One Jacks, for example, which is important for
One
that.
Jacks.
And so it's the dinner series that we have, and it's coming up, and it's about people sitting around through the same table, students, adults, talking through these issues, having those opportunities to be heard. And so I'm more than open to any other suggestions that people might have in terms of how can we make it a better place.
I'm sure you're getting them all the time. Yeah. And so we appreciate you taking a little time out to be with us. Welcome to town. Have you been to the beach yet, by the way?
You know, it's pretty busy schedule. I've been twice, though. My granddaughter came to town, and so we were able to sneak away for a few hours.
That's good, at least.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, a very busy guy and much on your plate. So best of luck, and thank you so much, David Szymanski, the new president of the University of North Florida. Thanks.
Thanks, Melissa.
All right. Much more still ahead later. Don't miss our ticket giveaway. Keep listening to win. But up next, it's a path forward to this area's transportation future. Back in a moment.
Didn't think it was a big deal for me to be a pregnant man. In Portland, like, maybe if you see a pregnant man at Starbucks, that's not the weirdest thing you've seen that day.
Join us for more true stories told live. This week, a pregnant man, a wedding, a divorce, and something called the Nacho Challenge. That's next time on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, where we talk about the biggest stories in the state.
From politics to education, the environment, and more. If it's news in Florida, we want to hear from you.
Let your voice be heard. Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at noon on WJCT.
WJCT readers are here for you. With the Florida Times Union, complete with news, op-eds, and obits, our readers will bring the paper to life to serve those with blindness and other physical challenges. Need our service? Go online to wjct.org/radio reading. Listen there and register as a listener, or we'll send you a special radio free. Call us at 904-358-6308, because at Radio Reading, we give voice to the printed word.
Well, the North Florida region is growing by leaps and bounds, as we all know. And in a few years, the First Coast will have more than 2 million people. So investing in transportation is critical, but how to do it? Making the right decisions will be very important. And the public needs to have a say. So to answer that question, the North Florida TPO, Transportation Planning Organization, is developing Path Forward 2045. They're going to identify the right programs and projects to meet the mobility needs of everyone in this area through the year 2045. Now, to do that, they need all of you out there to fill out a very quick online survey. And here's the fun part. If you fill out the survey, you're entered to win a grand prize. Jeff Sheffield is Executive Director of North Florida TPO. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
You too.
And I'm looking at the website right now. It's pathforward2045.com. People need to go to it, read through it, and fill out the survey. This isn't the first time TPO has done this, by the way, is it?
No, it is not. Actually, it's a federal requirement for us. So we do this every 5 years. Developing a 20-year vision for transportation in the region. This is the process that gives us the opportunity for federal funds to find their way into our community.
And you are a planning organization. And full disclosure, you're also an underwriter here at WJCT. But while most of us are thinking about next week or next month, you're thinking decades ahead, which can be difficult. But you're in the business of figuring out what's coming down the road and planning for it, right, and figuring out the infrastructure and the transit nodes and transportation nodes of this area, which is a big job.
Yeah, we're certainly trying. The challenge to transportation infrastructure is it takes so long to do much of it. So we really do need to be thinking about this stuff early. I've been at this for 26 years. I would suggest that the one we are kicking off now through 2045 is probably one of our most challenging, because when we look back traditionally, as we are projecting growth in our region and investments, that has typically been in way of widening roads and adding transit, very traditional type transportation. Mm-hmm. But with innovation and technology now, whether it's automated vehicles down the road or our mobility choices with Uber and Lyfts and other things like that, we are seeing such a rapid change.
Yeah.
This creates a real challenge for us.
And so you need the public to tell you what they think is important. And what we're talking about here is everything from roads to public transit, rail, bike, pedestrian, and new transportation technology like the driverless cars or autonomous vehicles.
And I think for us this time, as much as we are doing a 20-year plan, which is the requirement, because of the innovations that are happening now, significant emphasis will be placed in sort of that first 10-year window, because it is so hard to predict how technology is going to change. So it is very important that we get the public's input and their desires and their changes sort of in their mentalities of how they travel, so that we kind of get a feel for how our community is reacting to these types of changes, mm-hmm, so that we can hopefully make the best choices as we lay out these projects, because we are preparing projects that will it'll be 10 years in many cases before they happen. And I would suggest to those out there, you know, it is one of those things where it's much easier to care when it's happening tomorrow, and it is very difficult to think about long term. And so it is a challenge to get the public to participate in this type of an exercise. So very much encourage folks to think about this in the context, mm-hmm, of even maybe not yourself, but your children, mm-hmm, and your grandchildren.
And you will sweeten the deal, because if people fill out the survey, which only takes a few minutes, they are entered into a drawing for a couple of cool grand prizes.
Yeah, I think we have a Microsoft Surface tablet.
Nice.
And there's, I think, about $2,500 gift cards that are out there for folks as well to be placed into a drawing for that. So a little something to entice participation, maybe trying to get some levels greater than we have in the past.
Yeah, again, it's pathforward2045.com. Now, you tend to think of most people being very, very focused on their cars in this area, but I don't know, people might surprise you. I would think, I think people more than ever want more public transportation options.
I do, and I think even in the context of public transportation, just mobility choice changes, I think that even in larger national surveys, we are seeing that shift to a little more comfort within their minds of automated vehicles, more comfort in their minds with Uber and Lyft type environment. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing that. And as we also contemplate long-term, we see e-commerce now, digital learning, remote workers, the whole dynamic of how people are working and moving around is different. And it's not strange to think that maybe children born today may never learn to drive.
Isn't that
or
crazy?
Even own a vehicle when
it's
you
crazy.
Contemplate 16 years from now, when we yeah. look at the rapid progression of how things, and this doesn't mean necessarily that it's from an automated vehicle standpoint, it's the mobility choice. So the children born today may come into an environment where they're exclusively using other services to come get them.
And so why drive?
Very much the case in some situations. And so that's why it's much more challenging this time for us.
That is just an incredible cultural change.
It is.
I mean, you and I and everyone we knew, we could not wait to get our driver's license.
I know. And we consistently see that trend nationally of kids, even regardless, they're just not choosing to get a license. And now they become comfortable with other types of mobility. So it is a challenge, and, you know, we often think this stuff to be very futuristic and the reality of the industry right now, it's not.
It's here.
It is here. And what will drive it more is our challenges from regulatory and policy issues than the actual opportunity for that stuff to run.
And let's take a quick call for Jeff Sheffield, Executive Director of North Florida TPO. Fill out their survey, pathforward2045.com, and be entered to win a Microsoft Surface tablet or a $100 Visa gift card. One quick call. She's still getting in the queue. It's Catherine in San Marco. Hey, Catherine, go ahead quickly. You're on the air.
Hi. I work with a family nutrition program in Northeast Florida, and one of our biggest concerns is how transportation affects health, especially for the low-income community. I'm curious about how they'll be considering health, I guess, in the upcoming plan for the next 20 years.
Sure.
Yeah, could not agree with you more. We've observed that often and trying to create what they call active living by design. And that's very much focused from a health standpoint on not only just transportation, whether that's sidewalks, bike paths, and connectivity through those types of choices that in a way are somewhat forcing exercise, if you will. But it also comes with the development side of things that need to create these multi-purpose activity type neighborhoods where folks are encouraged to use walking or biking or other choices. But I will tell you that in our long range plan, as we look over 20 years, there is a significant number of projects that we invest in the bike ped and sort of complete street realm. We are seeing a much more aggressive trend in that direction. Communities are desiring more traditional roadways that are creating multiple modes. And so I would suggest to you that's sort of the direction we are going. But you offer a unique perspective from the health standpoint, and you are ideal to respond to our survey.
Yes, so definitely respond. Go to pathforward25.com and access the transportation survey. The password is just the word survey. Fill out the survey and be entered into a drawing for a grand prize, a Microsoft Surface tablet or a $100 Visa gift card. Pathforward2045.com. Jeff Sheffield, North Florida TPO. Always good to see you.
You too.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
with Public Radio's favorite family doc on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health. It'll be a jam-packed hour on healthy living, including this recipe for
the Midwest Beet Burger.
We always have a great time. So will you on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX.
Sundays at 5 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Keith Marks. Join me every Thursday evening at 11 p.m. for Avant Radio, a show of curious music for curious minds. Each show is themed, curated, and contextualized to explore new music. Come get curious on Thursdays at 11 on 89.9 FM.
Well, it's called Uncovering Jax, a new project using film and the printed word to tell little-known stories of this city, stories of injustice, struggle, freedom, and equality. Uncovering Jax will change Jacksonville's historical narrative so more people know its real stories, the ones you didn't get taught in school. Here with more, Adonica Toller, the Ritz Theater Museum Administrator. Good morning.
Good morning.
UNF Communications Professor Frank Gooden.
Good morning.
An old friend, and his students, Heidi Andrada and Kendall Russ. Hey, good morning, kids.
Good morning.
Okay, let's start with you, Frank. Mm-hmm. This is videos and print stories and even some documentaries.
Yes.
Telling stories of everyone from A. Philip Randolph to former slave Anna Kingsley.
Yes.
Filmmaker Richard Norman of the Norman Studios, even Zora Neale Hurston.
Mm-hmm.
Great stories.
Absolutely. And stories that really we think should be told. They do represent the a part of the Jacksonville city narrative, if you will. And just telling these stories helps to enrich the community and letting people know in the community that these different people from different various ethnic backgrounds played significant parts in the city.
And Adonica, the Ritz Theater and its museum tells a lot of this, but this is another way to get this information out to the public.
Exactly. And you're correct. We do tell many of some stories, but most of these stories are those that people have never heard of. They've never heard of the individual. And so it's just an opportunity, a tool that we're using to really let local residents know about their history of the city that they're living in now.
Okay, let's talk to the students, Heidi and Kendall. What projects are you working on?
So I did a project, a short documentary on the Kingsley Plantation. So I just did a lot of research filming there where I learned all about Zephaniah and Anna Kingsley. And I just realized that there's so much cool history there. And it was just crazy that I've lived in Jacksonville most of my life and I've never really heard these stories that I learned about or the projects that other people did.
Right. There's been a real effort to change that lately. There was even a tour of the Confederate monuments a couple of weeks ago. This is more of that, which is exciting. What's your project?
My project was about Joseph H. Blodgett, and he was the first Black millionaire in Jacksonville because he was the architect after the Great Fire of 1901. And overall, it was just amazing to see that he built so many homes, in fact, beautiful mansions that were torn down to build what is now 95 and the Shands Hospital. And growing up in Jacksonville, I went to Darnell Cookman in Stanton. So for me, I'm just like, I didn't realize how much of the history, our history, that I feel like we should all really celebrate and learn more about it.
Right. And these are just a few of the stories, Frank. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more coming.
Yes. We're continuing now. You know, I have two of my classes that are interviewing people to continue this effort. And it really is a part of, I think, this is the beginning, we hope, of a continuing effort to begin to get these stories out.
Well, you couldn't have a better professor. I can say this because I'm biased, because I worked with Frank on a film. It was called The 904, and he won a well-deserved Emmy for that.
Thank you.
So it's exciting to have you all on the show here and talk about this. Now, in a moment, we're going to take a quick break, and in a moment, we're going to tell everyone listening where they can be part of the premiere screening of Uncovering Jax, also The Spectator, with some other ideas for your weekend. So we will be right back.
A hurricane comes through. There are often people who've died. There is property that's been destroyed, and there is work to be done.
This is heart-wrenching. You know, we just come in and help clean it up and make some money doing it.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, following the money when disaster strikes. That is next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and to me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Marco Werman. The World's Newsroom brings you the big picture stories and some other stuff.
The reason why you slurp is not just to make a loud sound.
There's a lot of very slimy foods in lots of cultures that don't work exactly in the grammar of American food.
And I guess frog fallopian tubes are slimy.
They're not exactly slimy, they're sort of gelatinous.
Join us and hear the world this afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
The last time the unemployment rate was this low, America looked and sounded very different. I'm a leaving on a jet plane. Some states have serious labor shortages with jobs that are not getting filled. Today's buoyant economy needs a lot more than Peter, Paul, and Mary to stay afloat. Why good help is getting harder to find. Next time on 1A. Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Let me kiss you.
Welcome back, and we're continuing our conversation with the creators of Uncovering Jax, documentary films and other media projects, letting people know the real story of Jacksonville's past, including some important figures that fought for racial equality and much more. Adonica Toller, Ritz Museum and Theater. What's coming up next week? There's a film screening. How can everyone be part of it?
Well, the premiere of showing the screenings of the short stories done by these awesome students is Monday, October 27th at 7 p.m. at the UNF John A. Delaney Student Union Auditorium. And it will give you an opportunity to give you a larger picture of what the students have been working on. It's a really great project and great quality work. And I'm sure you will hear the names of someone you've never heard of before.
That's right. These are stories that should be in the local curriculum, but they're not. So there's been this amazing grassroots effort to educate the public about all of this. Go to uncoveringjax.com for more and come on out to the screening Monday night, 7 p.m. UNF at the John A. Delaney, named after Mr. Delaney, Student Union Auditorium. Adonica, Frank, and kids, thank you for being here. Again, it's uncoveringjax.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, and that's Monday. Finally, this hour, some ideas for your weekend. And also, we've got a ticket giveaway for the Southern Women Show. Great job. Thank you. Here with tickets, a swag bag, and more, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the pink-haired spectator of Jacksonville, our own selfie queen, Carrie Speckman is here today.
Woo!
You brought a swag bag with
you. I did. It's so cute.
You know how I love that.
The bag is from Noreen Young. It's got lips on it. She loves lips.
Yes.
It's got this tickets to the Southern Women's Show. It's got some of her lip balm. It's got a free app from Blue Bamboo. It's got all kinds of fun stuff in there.
So does the winner of the tickets win the swag bag as well?
Four tickets.
Four tickets?
Four. This is worth tens of dollars, Melissa. Tens of dollars.
Email us right now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. If you want four tickets and a cute little swag bag, your prize and also an incentive to attend the Southern Women's Show.
Which starts today
at the Prime Osborne First Coast Connect at WJCT.org, and we will pick the winner at random. You will have to come here to WJCT to pick up the tickets and the swag bag.
Yes.
Okay, so the Southern Women's Show.
Got exhibitors.
Today through Sunday.
Yes, and Noreen Young, beauty chef Noreen Young, will be showing you tips from the kitchen of how you can make yourself more beautiful. Dennis Chan, my boo.
Of Blue Bamboo.
He will be doing a demonstration. And then Savannah Chrisley, which I believe you just interviewed.
We did interview her from Chrisley Knows Best.
Yes, she will be making a special appearance.
Okay, so that's this weekend. Also this weekend, if you want a free tree for your yard, this is the greatest thing in the world. It's the Greenscape tree giveaway.
I don't even have a yard. I mean, I literally don't have a yard.
Are you going to go
it's
get a tree
cement.
Anyway?
No, I'm not going to go.
No.
That would require getting up and probably a truck.
But you just go.
Early.
You got to get there early.
They have bald cypress, live oak, American elm, Dahoon holly.
I have no idea what that is.
I'm sure we'll be getting a call from Greenscape at any moment.
But it's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Like, their whole thing is to promote the tree canopy.
Exactly.
So go get a free tree.
They
what
be
could be bad about
containers.
That?
Containers. Just, you know, don't bring like your Mini Cooper.
This is at 1999 San Marco Boulevard, Saturday, 9 a.m. sharp.
Yes.
The Greenscape,
until
the great tree giveaway until they're gone. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Also this weekend, WasabiCon.
Yes. Jacksonville's longest running pop culture convention celebrating cosplay, video games, anime, tabletop gaming, comics, and all things geek. And that's their quote, not
that's
mine.
That's their quote,
I
not yours.
I call them geeks. But they have exhibitors hall, celebrity guests, video game rooms, panels, workshops. It is at the Lexington Hotel and Conference Center.
Okay. Now, let's talk about
Saturday and Sunday.
TEDx Jacksonville is Saturday.
That is correct.
The Caddyshack Ranch is doing its Haunted Forest Saturday and next Saturday.
Correct.
And then also Saturday, it's country star Brett Eldridge coming to town to the arena.
A long way toward. No, he is at Daly's Place.
Daly's Place.
Yes.
You know, they're getting some great acts.
Playing three of his number one songs from his debut studio album, Bring You Back. But you already knew
that,
I'm sure.
Are you his publicist?
I do my research, ma'am.
That's right. It's the last Oktoberfest celebration of the year.
I'm assuming it's the last.
Crispy's in Springfield will do Oktoberfest next Friday night. And then, of course, the Jaguars play this Sunday against Houston at home next week in London, where Shad Khan is no longer buying Wembley Stadium.
I want to find a fun place to watch the London game. So if anybody has any suggestions.
Go down to the King's Head Pub on Route 1 on the way to St. Augustine.
So
that
early.
Is the most British looking place I've ever seen.
But the servers aren't British, so.
I think they are British.
Last time I went, they weren't.
Well, that's
They're
no
like, what
good.
Do you want to drink?
I said, no, you don't want to hear that.
They did play the Beatles
You want to hear,
time.
Hi, love, want a
Hello.
Pint?
Hello, Chippy.
Okay, last but not least, Stronger Than Stigma is doing the Nobody's Happy comedy tour for mental health advocacy for millennials. This is a one-night only show on October 23rd at the Comedy Zone down in Mandarin. This has gone across the country, and this is promoting mental health. I wanted to make a quick mention of that as well. So,
mental health, very important.
Very important. Go to thespectator.com for more, and again, you got to come to WJCT to win the Southern Women's Show tickets and swag bag. We will have the winner's name at the front desk.
You will not
Spectator,
be disappointed.
Always good to see you.
Pleasure and an inconvenience.
The students aren't clapping for you. They're just staring at you confusedly.
Like, what? Is she a grown-up?
Thanks so much for being here. When A's up next, I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back tomorrow at 9. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.